Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Coming up on Stu Does America. Medicare for All is kind of like dating a new person. Seems great at first and then you get to know them. All turns around. Ravi Suave from Reason joins us to help you understand why the Democrats have rejected the most woke amongst them. And surely this will get them canceled, of course, by tomorrow afternoon. And Grant Stinchfield stops by to discuss liberty and prosperity, plus which Democratic candidate wants to take all of that away as fast as possible. Don't forget to click the bell for notifications on YouTube and rate and review this podcast with 5 glorious stars. Always remember the phrase, it's great, whatever. Because that's how I know you're one of the cool kids. Subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/stew and make sure you use the code STEW because you'll save $10. And that's how they know that you like this stupid show.
Stew Does America.
Welcome to the program. Hello, everyone. Hello, hello, and thank you for coming by. My name is Stu Bergier, and I don't know if you know this, but I'm very good looking. Very good. I'm incredibly rich. That's me. And I have the physical stamina of a free-range stallion galloping on the beach. And I also forgot to mention for this segment, you're going to have to need a little suspension of disbelief would be useful here. With all this in mind, will you marry me? Okay, we got the poll results coming in. I'm watching the monitor a little bit high. Okay, looking okay, all right, poll results are in. Apparently not all of you are able to suspend quite enough disbelief, but 56% of you would marry me. 42% are mortified / physically repulsed. And that's a lot better than reality, so thank you for that. Before we start booking the honeymoon, though, you probably should know a couple details or two. I'm a big snorer. I'm sorry about that. My hygiene has been rated as below acceptable by various physicians and also by most people just kind of passing by in my general area. I am on a path to weigh about 455 pounds by next fall. Now, I'm not saying I committed the crime documented in Making a Murderer, but I was in Wisconsin a lot in 2005. Oh, and I'm pretty sure I had COVID-19 and COVID-20. But I'm not quite sure about the 20 part. Now, think about it again. All this information in your head. Now, would you marry me? Let's see. All right. Not really sure a poll can go to negative 27, but coincidentally, that is the score I usually get when rated on a 1 to 10 scale. The point is, it's hard to answer a question when you don't have all the information, isn't it? Sure, I sound like a dreamboat when all that you knew was I was rich and good-looking. But when you know that you're also on a bullet train to a snoring, obese, and unshowered murder suspect whose internal organs are more than 3/4 filled with coronavirus, you might change your mind. This is the situation for Medicare for All.
A recent Kaiser poll shows that a majority of Americans, 56%, and 81% of Democrats support a national health care plan.
Remember when that guy was on TV? On the surface, of course, that is true. 56% of Americans say they want Medicare for All, and only 42% oppose it. It's polling like this that has basically every one of the 449 Democratic presidential candidates supporting it. And when you pile on the most talked about features of Medicare for All, the popularity goes through the roof.
People are not going to pay any premiums. They're not going to pay any deductibles. They're not going to pay any co-payments. So if you call a premium a tax, we're getting rid of that.
A significant feature of Medicare for All is that it pays for long-term care, both long-term care in a facility and long-term care at home.
Healthcare is a human right. Whether you're old or young or rich or poor.
Healthcare is a basic human right.
This sounds awesome. I mean, when you tell people they're going to be getting all this fabulous healthcare systems for free, all the benefits for nothing, with no premiums, no out-of-pocket expenses, you get all the way up to 67% support. Now, you're totally lying to them, but congratulations, 2 out of 3 of these dullards actually believe you. If Medicare for All makes healthcare a human right, or a human right, as Bernie would say, then 71% support it. I mean, that sounds pretty great, just like my stallion-like endurance. Quick side note. Remember, Democrats love to make everything that isn't a right into a right, like health care and high-speed Wi-Fi and marshmallow rainbow unicorns. I love those, too. But when it comes to Second Amendment rights that you actually have already, you know, defending your life, your liberty, your property, they're busy taking that one away. It's something to think about before you go to the polls this season. So let me ask those exact same people from the poll if they want Medicare for All after they actually get the most basic information about it. Medicare for All will eliminate private insurance. The plan you like right now is going to turn into the plan that you used to have, and don't try to get it again because it's now illegal. If private insurance is eliminated, support for Medicare for All drops by 19 points to only 37%. Opposition is 58%. So just with that small piece of information about how the plan would actually operate, you go from America favoring Medicare for All by 14 points to opposing it by 21. Similar things happen when you tell people that their free health care doesn't happen to be free. When told that most Americans are gonna pay more in taxes, only 37% of people support Medicare for All and 60% oppose. It is underwater by 23 points. That's why you saw a lot of Democrats, adjust their messaging.
It sure will help, I think, if we can take steps like what I'm proposing with Medicare for All Who Want It to make sure everybody's covered and no one's falling through the cracks.
I believe the best and boldest idea here is to not trash Obamacare, but to do exactly what Barack Obama wanted to do from the beginning, and that's have a public option.
I believe we have to protect and build on Obamacare. That's why I proposed adding a public option to Obamacare as the best way to lower cost and cover everyone.
Medicare for those who want it. It's an interesting slogan. In theory, it at least preserves your choice to stay out of their miserable dystopia of a system. The long-term reality is a totally different story, but we'll leave that alone today. The problem with this new branding slapped on single-payer healthcare is that eventually Medicare for All becomes Medicare for those who know something about it. And when that knowledge shows up, everybody runs for the hills. As anyone who has ever looked at these things knows, single-payer government healthcare always, and I mean always, leads to delays in treatment. Usually those delays can be horrific and cause people untold pain and suffering and often death. But even if you undersell the darkest consequences and just tell people, it'll lead to delays in some medical tests and treatments. Support drops from the mainstream media headline of 56% all the way down to 26%. A full 70% of Americans don't want this system if it causes any delay in treatment, which it will, I promise you. How do people fall for this stuff? How does it happen? It's because most of their information is coming from people like this.
Bloomberg spent $500 million on ads. U.S. population, 327 million. Don't tell us if you're ahead of us on the math. He could have given each American $1 million and have had lunch money left over. It's an incredible way of putting it.
It's an incredible way of putting it. It's true. It's disturbing. It does suggest, you know, what we're talking about here, which is there's too much money in politics.
It is an incredible way of putting it, like the opposite of credible, because it would have cost Bloomberg $330 trillion to do that. But there wasn't even a minute of hesitation there. That didn't sound the least bit outlandish to two reporters at America's highest levels of journalism. It's also why spending $97 trillion over a decade on free everything for everyone doesn't sound outlandish either. Of course we can afford it. If Michael Bloomberg can give everyone $1 million, why can't we have free health care? Too many people are focused on too many things to know every detail of the horrors of Medicare for All. But there's no reason the media can't give them the basic information. And when the American people get the basic information, they want no part of Medicare for All. Let's just hope that happens before it's too late.
Who does America?
It has been a crazy week. I mean, this election, the Super Tuesday was wild. I'm very tired. This is like one of those weeks where this feels like it's almost like a real job. There's a lot going on. Robbie Suave is here with us. He's a senior editor at Reason and a former Forbes 30 Under 30 member and author of Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump. He's also the creator of a brand new video game, Breadline Battles,
players must successfully navigate a society short on food while not getting robbed or killed. I guess it's the first socialist video game, and I can't wait to play it. Robbie, thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote a really interesting piece for Reason, and you brought up a really good point, which is there was a lot of attention and adoration sort of foisted upon a lot of these candidates. There was a sort of a selection process that went on with the media, and that selection process was an absolute catastrophe.
Yeah, that's right. Voters could not possibly have had less interest in the candidates that were preferred by the media. The New York Times endorsed Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar. There was profile after fawning media profile of O'Rourke, of Mayor Pete. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris was beloved by the media for a while. So the media made it seem like, you know, these more progressive, more interesting, more intersectional candidates, it was going to be one of them, when really all along polls suggested that actual Democratic primary voters preferred Biden and Bernie. They preferred the oldest, whitest men in the race. They could not have less interest in the kind of sort of intersectional identity politics that media pundits love so much.
Yeah, and it seems like there was a real pushback against this idea of this sort of over-wokeness, right, where every single group is being sort of pandered to. I mean, Elizabeth Warren may have been the worst offender here, but it seemed like everyone came up with their way of pandering to a specific special interest group. And that, as they all sort of fought and climbed over each other to try to get further and further down that road, the Democratic voters seemed to want to go the opposite direction.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren suggested that a transgender child should be the person to pick the next Secretary of Education. Elizabeth Warren uses the term Latinx to refer to Latino people, even though that is activist vocabulary that 99.999% of Latino people do not like and do not use. This was a campaign conducted using the language of the far left woke progressives. It's just not popular with the rest of the country. And I think conservatives sometimes think it's just not popular with them. It's not popular with Democrats either. There are more moderate or culturally moderate Democrats than it seems, because there's no one speaking for them ever. The media does not speak for them. They were ignored through the coverage of this race until finally it was time for them to make themselves heard. And when they made themselves heard, they indicated, no, you know what? We like the former vice president. We like Bernie Sanders because, they're the best known candidates. They don't care that they don't check off enough boxes, that they don't satisfy like an Oberlin College undergraduate's requirements for who should be president. They just don't care.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see the reaction after it doesn't work. Warren specifically, since Elizabeth Warren steps out, I've seen countless think pieces about how the reason she didn't win, she was so successful and so capable, and the American people just couldn't deal with her because she was a woman. They can't deal with a successful woman. They can't deal with a woman who fights back. That is, it's on us, and we're going to have women's studies essays written for a very long time on this topic. But in reality, what they're doing seemingly, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they're criticizing their own voters. I didn't vote in their primary. I don't think you voted in their primary. Somebody voted in their primary, and when they voted, they didn't choose her.
She didn't win her own state. She didn't do well in states, you know, that were in her part of the country. Mm. Look, I can't write off sexism entirely as an explanation for her not doing well. But you would, to say that was like the main thing or an important thing, you would need evidence. You need powerful evidence to suggest that. I don't really see any. And they never bring that up, you know, when it's, well, why didn't Amy Klobuchar do better? Why isn't Tulsi Gabbard doing better? Why this was, for some reason, this was only an explanation leveled at Elizabeth Warren. Look, it's simply the case that her policies, her personality, and her cultural kind of signaling, her social signaling, is the kind of thing many in the media like and agree with. So they didn't even understand why other people weren't supporting her. Actually, Matt Iglesias of Vox.com with a V, had to write a piece that was headlined like, why Elizabeth Warren is losing, even though all your friends like her, you know, you being the audience of Vox, the kind of, you know, the graduate, the college graduate or upper level kind of disproportionately white, actually, but people interested in kind of racial identity politics who love her. It just didn't sell well in the rest of the country.
That's actually pretty self-aware. That's a pretty funny concept from Vox there. I wonder, is there a certain level of this, Robbie, where, you know, the American people, conservative, liberal, libertarian, anything, I think, generally speaking, want people to be able to live their lives, want people to be able to, you know, if you're doing something in your lifestyle that's different than, you know, what that person's doing, whatever, we're pretty much OK with it. But there's a certain level of it that becomes inherently odd, I think, to the American people when you're talking about things like, transgendered people playing in women's sports, for example. There's like a line like that where like a mom who might be incredibly progressive and very liberal just looks at this and say, wait a minute, this guy is going to go beat my daughter at the cross country race. And, you know, right or wrong, there is there's a level where I think because they're all competing to get as far down this road as they can, they're violating something that's like that doesn't seem right just to the average American person.
Yeah, I agree. And look, you know, I'm a social liberal by some stretches of the definition. Maybe I don't qualify now based on what's required in recent years. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a fairly tolerant person on trans issues. But you can't even have sort of questions about, like, because there are some hard cases, like the things you just brought up. Well, how do we decide who gets what facilities? But I think it's totally reasonable for people to have, like, good faith, like, some of this is hard, and we have to kind of work at this, and it might take case by case. Each example, we might have to do something differently. Maybe there isn't a national federal policy that we can force on all schools and all parents at once that would possibly capture the nuance of every individual situation.
Well, that's a wild theory there.
You can't say that. They say you're a bigot for even kind of expressing that idea. And that's, I think, the resistance to the kind of Warren style. No, we figured this all out already. We figured it out yesterday, and we hate you. You're a hateful person for not having immediately agreed to what we just decided on yesterday. That kind of approach is so alienating, not just to conservatives, but I think also to kind of moderates or people who, you know, are not taking like a socially, like religious conservative position on these issues, but nevertheless think it's sometimes a little complicated and a little difficult to figure out.
I think you're totally right there. And another example of this comes from a topic that you've covered quite a bit, which, and I've heard this from so many moms around, in my circle and in others, listeners and everything else, where every mother of a daughter wants their daughter protected, let's say in college, from someone violating them in some terrible way. Every mother wants that. And we all want to make sure that anyone who does anything wrong in that realm is punished to the fullest extent of the law. No one is okay with that. But they also see their sons. And they see their sons, hey, they're at college and they might have a girlfriend and there might be a bad breakup. And all of a sudden it's her word against my son's, and he has no chance to even go in front of these kangaroo courts and even argue their opinion. And I think that level of wokeness, if you will, is the type of thing that if Democrats don't get it under control, they're not going to be able to compete for the middle of the country.
Yeah, or it could be your father or your grandfather, and it could be something from 30 or 40 years ago that there is no way to adjudicate now. I mean, that's what I think terrified so many people during the whole Kavanaugh thing. Yeah. I talk to people who are kind of moderate, who are, you know, I would not describe as like pro-Trump or anything, but who were, you know, women. And I think the thinking of the left was like, okay, well, women are going to, you know, hate this guy because they're going to imagine, you know, women being mistreated by someone like him. But I think a lot of women are thinking, well, someone could just come out of the woodwork and accuse my sons or my husband or my brother or my father, and it would be totally unfair, and there'd be no way to respond to these charges because no one remembers. And that's, you know, that's scary. that's alarming for everyone. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to say, well, I'm a feminist. I'm an older school feminist who wanted equality for women, who wanted the same treatment for women. And what I'm seeing, for instance, on college campuses is not equal treatment, but a sort of almost patronizing treatment of women that they can't take care of themselves, and that we have to like throw away due process in these kinds of scenarios. That even liberals object to. Liberals used to be good on due process.
Yeah.
It's a very punitive kind of the sort of intrinsically believe accusations that the activists insist we do. And the Democratic Party, it's not their members. It's not the base. It's the leadership. It's the media allies that have been captured by that mindset. It's not most of them. It's the people who speak for them and who write, who script the narrative.
Yeah.
And it must be pretty frustrating to be a Democratic voter who isn't on board on that. There's millions of you, but you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. There's that kind of uncanny valley thing that going on, I think. You know, like the example from the media recently. I can't stand Michael Bloomberg. He's like one of my least favorite politicians on earth. I do not like Chris Matthews at all. But they had this situation where supposedly Mike Bloomberg made this joke many years ago, which he was getting in trouble with. It seemed to be the central issue of the campaign for Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren goes on Chris Matthews' show, and Chris Matthews said, "Well, what evidence do you have that he actually said this?" And she says, "Well, it was her words." And he said, "I think a really fair question for a journalist to ask. Well, what evidence do you have to believe her over him?" That question was so offensive, it essentially had Chris Matthews losing his job. The fact that he didn't reflexively side with Elizabeth Warren, who has no knowledge of the situation whatsoever other than a news report, over a person who was actually there. Now, Bloomberg very well may have said that. He probably did. But just asking the question, do you have any evidence to support your accusation, was enough to get this guy who's been there for 650 years fired. It's a really weird world.
Totally. And Elizabeth Warren has some credibility issues in my mind. I think it's total. I mean, she should be grilled anyway because she's a candidate for the presidency. She's a politician. But actually, that incident kind of reflects exactly my concern about sort of Me Too stuff going too far. Because now Chris Matthews has said he really did it. He admitted when he announced he was stepping down. He said things that he shouldn't have said that were sexist in nature that weren't always well received.
Yes.
Sometimes they were well received. There were also women on Twitter saying we had it was perfectly mutual and it was fine. But not everyone felt like that. So that's fine. But then those same people saying the things that he'd said in the past were sexist, he shouldn't say them. They also said that him grilling Warren in that way was akin to the sexism, was like falling on the same spectrum of behavior. And that is crazy. Yeah. To say that it is just like sexual harassment to be just like harshly scrutinizing or questioning a woman. If you're a journalist, that's the job of, like, what are you doing if you're not doing that? The job of journalists is to be skeptical, is to ask these important questions. And we're not drawing, we're conflating the actual sexual harassment with that. So I thought it was very undignified the way they sort of just got rid of him over all that and spoke to the new power of this very punitive Me Too feminism that I think has done plenty of good, but also goes too far sometimes. And this was a good example of that.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Robbie Suave, the latest piece is Democratic primary voters decisively rejected the media's favorite candidates. You can get that in anything Robbie does is always great and worth reading. Thanks so much for coming on the program, Robbie.
My pleasure.
We'll be back in a second. Hi, I'm Stuber Gear. I'm pretty sure I have the coronavirus or allergies. Please pray for me. We have a bit of a situation going on here with the media, who is just completely ignoring the facts when it comes to COVID-19. With an attempt to try to bash Donald Trump. We did a big segment on this yesterday. If you missed it, go back to the archives. You can see them all on YouTube. If you just subscribe, you'd know it was there already. But they have all the back issues, or all the back episodes there. And you can go to blazetv.com/stew, use the promo code stew, save $10, and get all the archives. But it's worth going back to see, because medical experts actually are agreeing with what Donald Trump had said the other day about the mortality rate being a lot lower than we expect. Right now, it's being reported at 3.4%, which is incredibly high. However, this is what happens when you have a breakout like this. It looks really high early on and usually comes down later on. That's what Trump was trying to communicate. And he said at one point, it looks like it's going to be, I don't know, somewhere like, a 1%, maybe a good deal less than 1%. Well, here's the latest update from the experts. You tell me what he says.
The typical mortality rate for seasonal flu is about 0.1% or 0.15%. The best estimates now of the overall mortality rate for COVID-19 is somewhere between 0.1% and 1%.
I mean, this is not something we're making up. We don't have to stretch on this one. The facts, the science is on our side here, and it's important that people actually understand that. Watching this all happen, it's been a bit of an embarrassment, honestly. I mean, we're going to get to a point next week where we have about 1 million new tests. We're going to be able to have a better handle on how big of a problem this is. You'd love it to go faster. You'd love to have every answer. But the truth is, this is something that humans have never dealt with before. So we're dealing with it now. There's travel all around the globe. There's a video going around of Bill Gates saying, hey, this is going to happen at some point. The chances are basically 100% we're going to have a breakout. This is a few years ago. We do know this. And I will say this, as a person who is libertarian leaning and somebody who believes there should be very little government intervention on anything. Infectious disease, viral situations like this are one of the things that the government can be involved in and has done a good job in at times in the past. So hopefully this continues now. Let me go to our montage here. I'm going to skip a clip here and go to the montage. This is a clip of what's happening in the media since the impeachment went down. Now, you remember, the impeachment was going to be the worst thing in the world. Donald Trump's the worst guy in the world. They never really seemed to have much of anything on the impeachment, in my opinion. But listen to the narrative being echoed all over the place since all of that went down. Watch.
The president of the United States is a man on a mission. It is a dangerous mission. Dangerous to our democracy. That's not hyperbole. It's just the truth. Sit back and listen.
An emboldened president threatens the rule of law like never before.
You thought Donald Trump was wild, unbound before?
This is just the beginning. Is this a whole different game?
Frankly, he seems more emboldened than ever.
A president emboldened, a Justice Department under his thumb.
Emboldened.
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 Emboldened, you might say.
Who has done the emboldening?
What does it mean for him to be emboldened?
We watch him like a bullfighter watches a bull. And we watch him, and we notice one thing about him. He gets emboldened.
He's angry, he's vengeful, he's petty.
Unleashed, unchained. Unshackled.
He is unleashed. Mm-hmm. He is furious.
Going scorched earth, lashing out and ready to take revenge.
Now he is on his vengeance tour.
Who needs to pay the price for this? Who needs to be taken out?
Is the president so emboldened that no one will stop him?
There just seems to be not much anyone can do about it.
What are the Democrats going to do? Impeach him?
Are there any guardrails left in this administration?
What are Republicans going to do? Speak out against him?
There's nothing that can stop him.
This is what's hilarious about all of this is this is the obvious consequence. If you go after an impeachment, which is like the crown jewel of get this president out of the White House in the Constitution, and you fail with it, you don't fire that bullet unless you're really sure you're going to hit somebody with it. And they fired this constitutional bullet at the president, and, it fell about 400 yards short. And if you actually believed he was this horrible a person that was going to be emboldened, you would have never done this. Now they've done it, and what are you going to do, impeach him again? It's just a ridiculous situation. We'll come back with more in a second. I'm joined now by longtime conservative talk show host and former award-winning investigative journalist Grant Stinchfield. He's also the founder of Adopt AR. Did you know each year thousands of AR-15s age out in the adoption system? Sad. All these cute little buggers want to do is have an owner to protect and someone they can love. And thank you so much for starting that wonderful charity, Grant. We appreciate it.
I want to start that charity, actually.
sounds great, right?
I need to start Adopt AR. It's great.
Open up a Venmo. I'll get you started.
Perfect.
That's a good one. Thanks for coming down. I'm interested in your take on the coronavirus because, first of all, it's the only thing you're allowed to talk about, I think, now,
right.
Today. And, I think it hits a couple of different things. One, you know, there's this media reaction to Trump, and of course they have to say how terrible he's handling it. That's just like a requirement. Right. But two, it is, I think, a legitimately scary thing for a lot of people. It's kind of a crazy unknown. What do you think is going on with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at what the mainstream media has done, they have taken this and they've weaponized it against President Trump. And the bottom line is they've weaponized it against America. I don't know if you're like me, but I looked at my 401ks. Getting hammered.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hammered. And so what people need to know is this is how strongly the mainstream media feels about taking President Trump out of office, that they're willing to ruin you financially. And that's what they're doing. The stock market has nothing to do with the economy right now. It has everything to do with hype. I spent over 20 years in the mainstream media working my way through the NBC system before I woke up and realized this is a bogus system and got the hell out.
Yeah.
One thing that the media is great at is its sensationalism of just about everything. You look at it with guns, you look at it with mass shootings, you look at it now with the coronavirus, and add in that they think they can hurt President Trump and conservatives, well, then it's like a perfect storm for them.
I definitely want to get into the election, because I do think their cleanest path to getting rid of Donald Trump is the economy being poor, right? If that happens, he is vulnerable, right? If he's seen as being incompetent or something when it comes to handling this, it is going to be a problem for him. So it definitely seems like they're trying to exploit that. But do you think that there is, like, are you worried about it as a real thing? Do you think that this could be a real health threat to the American people?
I'm worried about it less than I am worried about the flu. And so the reason I do that is I just look at the numbers. I saw on Fox Business, they said 32 million flu cases in the 2019-2020 flu season. And we're what with coronavirus? 90,000? I know it grows every day, but compared to 32 million?
Yeah.
I mean, this is nothing compared to what the flu does. And the flu kills people, far more people than the coronavirus does.
Yeah. I mean, it's really wild. It's 60,000 people in the United States, I think it was 2017 or 18, die from the flu. That just seems completely insane to me. But it kind of makes me think like we should be worrying a lot more about the flu, not less about coronavirus, but more about the flu.
I told you before the show started, my mother and father from New York, God bless them, but they are liberals. And my father's texting me, well, what about the people that came down with it, the coronavirus? Yeah. And he's 76 years old. He's worried about himself, which you know, I get it. But I said, what about the forgotten victims of the flu? We got a lot more of them that are dying of this, and nobody's talking about those poor souls.
Yeah, it's true.
Right?
Nobody seems to care.
No.
You know, we did this thing yesterday on Donald Trump being criticized for something that the media knew he was right on. I mean, he said, you know, the 3.4% mortality rate was too high. And he said, you know, I've got a hunch it's a little too high. It's going to be more like, you know, probably, you know, more like 1% or less. And we went through all these experts, medical expert after medical expert after medical expert, saying the exact same thing, except not in Trump's language, right? Like lots of big five-syllable words and sounding like doctors instead of Trump, who's saying it off his cuff. But he is actually communicating the real situation, which is we think it's not going to be all that bad in the end, but there's still some uncertainty there. And the media, who knows exactly what he's talking about, intentionally ignore what he's trying to do, just so they can get their headlines, their rage clicks. You know, they put it out there. Trump is trying to solve this problem on hunches.
Right.
That is something that feels like it is unique to the Trump era.
Yeah, I mean, they know how Trump talks.
Yeah.
He talks off the cuff. It's a very common theme among New York businessmen to talk like that. And so that's how he talks. But when you look at the mortality rate, and again, I go back to, I was an investigative reporter. I do my research. New England Journal of Medicine came out with a big study that backs up the whole idea that maybe 2% mortality rate. And the 2% mortality rate is the exact same mortality rate as the flu.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because it was, I think it's 0.1 or 0.2 for the flu. So it could be worse. But we don't know, right? Like, as they say over and over again, those mortality rates are only really worthwhile after the outbreak.
Right.
Because you don't know how many people have it. We don't even have tests to find out how many people have it yet. And they're going after it because this is what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And this goes to the wider, I think, the issue of the election, right? Can you imagine, first of all, trying to go through a situation like this with Medicare for All? I mean, that would be, I can't even imagine what that would look like.
You know, on my radio show, I had someone from Canada talk about the healthcare system there, and they had a brain tumor. And there was a wait to get operated on in Canada.
A brain tumor.
So they came to the United States and got operated here. Well, our healthcare system's great, but you don't want to wait to get a brain tumor operated. We go to this Medicare or Medicaid for all.
Yeah.
That's game over as far as we know it, as quality health care and getting it in a timely fashion. And I promise you, the big scam of this whole thing is they want to tell you that people are being kicked out onto the street and not getting health care. Have they ever been to Parkland Hospital? Anybody can walk into any hospital in America. Forget about the county hospital. Any hospital in America, they will treat you.
Yeah, no, it's the law, right? Mm-hmm. So are you of the, because I've gone back and forth on this about 27 times.
You're smiling. I can't wait to hear what you ask.
Are you of the belief that you want to face Bernie Sanders because he's easier to defeat? Or are you the belief you'd rather have Joe Biden because Bernie Sanders is uniquely scary? To me, I've come down, I think, on the side of, like, I just don't want Bernie. I do not want a socialist as president of this country. Joe Biden would suck really bad, but I do not want a socialist. I'd rather take that possibility off the table if it's at all possible.
If President Trump loses, freedom as we know it in America goes out the door, whether it's guns, whether it's health care,
our
judicial system, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. Right. But I will say this. I think Bernie Sanders is easier to beat, but I am with you. God forbid some fluke happens. We have these blind liberal zombies and they show up in droves to vote for this man and he wins. That's devastating.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have a Joe Biden over a Bernie Sanders, but I'd rather have a President Trump over either one of them by far. So I'm kind of caught in the middle. Like there's a safety net, some respects in Bernie Sanders. You know, Sarah Gonzalez asked me this question the other day, and she said, is it like getting stabbed, you know, if you have Bernie Sanders? I said, well, if you have Joe Biden, it's like getting stabbed, too. Bernie Sanders stabs you with a machete. Joe Biden stabs you with a kitchen knife. Either way, you're getting stabbed.
It still hurts.
Yeah, it still hurts.
I think the watching, you know, back in 2016, when Trump was on his way to the nomination, my in my head, the person I really kind of wanted him to be against was Biden, because I thought it would be a fun matchup. Hillary Clinton sucked. Like, she was not fun. You couldn't get anything out of
that.
She's
not fun. You don't see her as the
fun. She's not. She could barely walk. At that time, and you go back to 2012, 2016, there's a little fire in Joe Biden, you know? Like, he even though he was ridiculous and he had gaffes all the time, he at least had energy. He would come back at you. He'd talk over you. There was something there. That's not there anymore in 2020.
Well, it's not. But what you're describing is the who would you want to have a beer with?
Yeah, right? Yeah, kind of.
And you know what? I'd sit down and have a beer with Joe Biden. Yeah. I bet you he could tell some funny stories. Mm-hmm. He might get some of them wrong and forget a bunch of them right now, but he could probably tell you some funny stories.
Yeah.
I do not want to have a beer with Bernie Sanders. You know how brutal that would be?
Ugh.
To sit and have a beer with this miserable old mother scratcher?
He is humorless. He is miserable. Has he ever had 5 minutes of happiness in his life? I couldn't detect it if he has.
No.
With Biden, it's interesting, though. I think in 2016, it may have been a difficult battle against Biden in some ways. Biden's so much more likable than a Hillary Clinton. It may have been more difficult. Mm-hmm. This version of Joe Biden is eminently beatable. This should not be a problem for Donald Trump, especially with the economy looking like this.
Joe Biden has brought this, by the way, on himself, right? So he keeps having all of these gaffes, one after the other. And you take one individually, like the other day, he said, meet my sister, and it's his wife, meet my wife, it's his sister. Like, I get how that could happen to something, right? You're on the campaign. But the fact that it happens every single day makes it really difficult for him. And I related it back to, I got a buddy of mine who is really having a problem of missing short putts. And we play for a little bit of money on the course.
Yeah.
So I told him when we got back in the cart, I said, you know what happens to you keep missing these short putts is we're going to make you putt everything, right? That's what we're doing to Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Every comment he makes now is being dissected because he's missing so many short putts.
Yeah. And it's in his head now, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's constantly, you know, I think this a little bit of this happened to George W. Bush. When he would have, remember at the beginning when he was running, he had those moments where he'd kind of have the brain farts and he'd say the wrong thing. And after a while, I think that just starts feeding into itself. It gets into his head. I'm torn on it. I think part of it is just, honestly, the faculties are slowing down. Hopefully it's not anything serious, but it seems like with Biden, they're slowing down a little bit.
When Joe Biden's your youngest male candidate running for president, you're in big trouble.
I mean, to open it up, I mean, Trump is the spry youngster in this race.
Right.
Right? Like, he's 72? I mean, this is incredible. But if you look at Biden, they tried to do this thing where they did this big profile of him and said that he, when he was young, he was a stutterer. And they're just trying to say that it's not his mental faculties going. It's that he had a stuttering issue when he was young. He was able to defeat it, and now it's coming back later in life. Would
you believe the stuttering story?
I'm not sure.
I believe it's like Corn Pop.
Yeah.
I don't believe that story about him and the gangster.
Do you believe the story about the kids underneath the pool playing with his leg hair? That one?
That I believe.
That you believe.
That I believe.
See, they say, don't say we're not bipartisan. We believe Joe Biden on this one thing.
On this one thing. He is creepy, and he does like kids playing with his leg hair, I guess.
So if Biden gets the nomination, which I think, I mean, he's the overwhelming favorite now to at least get a plurality going into the
Am I crazy that I still have long shot money on Hillary and Michelle?
You know, I feel like Hillary, yes. But Michelle, maybe, I mean,
as a team.
Yeah, if Michelle came in, she'd be very difficult to handle. We've had O'Reilly on before, and O'Reilly's like, if Michelle comes in, Trump's in big trouble. I mean, I don't know if that's true.
The thing is, you know, we say this like half joking. You never know. I mean, the Democrats are, we know that they cheat. Mm-hmm. So you know they're going to cheat within their own system if they want
they will
to get
if
their
can,
way.
Yeah.
They will cheat if they can. But you wonder, how in the world would they do it? I guess they could pull it off if they wanted something. Because I say it half jokingly, but in some respects, I'm like, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if somehow, you know, the music starts playing and flashing and out comes Hillary and Michelle.
Well, I think the most plausible way there is, you know, if it's looking really bad for Biden, at one point, Biden says, you know what, health problems, I got to step out. And if he steps out after the convention or right before the convention, they probably would have to just come up with somebody. And I don't think they're not going to give it to Bernie. They don't want to. Clearly, I will say this. They have one real ideological socialist in this race, and they did do everything they could to stop him from getting the nomination. I think it's mostly because they thought he would lose. But still, I'm glad that occurred.
You know, when I looked at, and especially our home state of Texas, we broadcast here in Texas. I live here in Texas. And the fact that Biden won in Texas when it was predicted that Bernie was going to take Texas, even among Democrats, I said, at least I have some faith that they're not all complete loony bins.
That's nice.
They're just minor loony bins.
Minor loony bins.
Right.
All right, one more question before we go.
Yeah.
If Joe Biden wins this nomination, I think him picking a VP is going to be one of the biggest, it's going to be maybe the biggest moment of this campaign, and also one of the most important VP selections of all time. Mm-hmm. Because I think most people look at Joe Biden and say, I don't know if he's going to even want to stay in office for 4 years. Any sense on who you think he might pick?
So I will first, and I don't often disagree with you, but I disagree that VP candidates are very important.
I usually am with you on this, but with Biden, he looks so mentally vulnerable that you could picture 2 years in, he's just like, you know what, I'm having health issues, I need to step down.
So the question then becomes, does he pick a socialist to satisfy that left-wing faction of the party, or does he pick someone that he may agree with on whatever road he's going down? I've often thought, you know, Kamala Harris, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it checks a lot of boxes, and the Democrats like to check boxes. It has nothing to do with your politics. No. It's just checking boxes.
Yeah.
She checks some boxes for him.
She does. Grant Stinchfield, where can people find you?
Stinchfield, 1776, Twitter, Instagram.
On the Twitters, yes, on the social media. Go
don't
get
do
Grant.
Enough of it.
I know. I'm the same way.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Back in a second. Every day I come in here and try to make this show as much like back-breaking labor for you to watch or listen to as possible. That's why StuDoesAmerica.com has all the links for you to do all the things I need to ask you to do, like subscribe and follow and all those things. Thanks for watching.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.